Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
And good evening, everyone. Welcome to another Tuesday night installment here at Your Remedy is in the Law. Tonight, of course, we're discussing various IRS administrative remedies with our speaker, Mr. Tony Davis. My name is Mark Michaels. I'll be your host for this evening's conference brought to you by Your Remedy is in the Law, which is in direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer. Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you are on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very politely ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone joining this call looking for legal advice has no place or business here. Nobody here at Your Remedy is in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes. It's just folks saying what they might do where they're similarly situated to you. You might get a little bit of education out of it, but mainly you're just going to get folks' opinions about what they might do. However educated and experienced these thoughts and opinions might be, they are just people's opinions nonetheless, and it's always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. I'd like to go over a few things here with Your Remedies in the Law, if I could, very quickly. First of all, if I can take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com, if we look up in the upper right-hand corner, we see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and you'll have a separate page come up with just two items on it. These two items are of much importance, though, especially if this is all new to you. First and most importantly on the left is the jurisdictionary course. This is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure. Better known to some as American jurisprudence or AMJUR, the rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic understanding of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, mostly known for its high national win rate in most traffic cases throughout the country. At least that's what it's most popularly acquired for. But that is not really why it's on this page. The reason that we have it up here with the jurisdictionary course is when you go through it, you'll notice that it utilizes a lot of the same fundamental procedures that you learned about in the jurisdictionary course. So it kind of acts as a real-life homework assignment. Also, for a lot of folks, it's their first time committing to action. Folks seem a little more willing to take that first step, probably because of such a high success rate and traffic scenarios being such a common interest in this country today. The common law default, although known majorly for traffic purposes, has many other. Truly, it's for most scenarios that you may find yourself in where there's no damage to property or person. It's just some entity is claiming you broke a rule, therefore you must pay a civil penalty. Both of these items are very affordably priced. The jurisdictionary with a contribution of $250 and the common law default at $150. Also on the subject of Your Remedies in the Law, most of you are probably familiar now with Americans Restoring America. Every time you visit the homepage of YourRemediesInTheLaw.com, you are met with that blue box that pops up asking if you'd like to continue on to the site that you were visiting or stay and visit Americans Restoring America. The reason that we've done this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. There are multiple information providers talking about multiple subjects, as well as many other features and study groups at Your Remedy is in the Law. And Your Remedy is in the Law is just one of a couple dozen websites that all together make up Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit for you to see, and we hope that you'll do just that at your leisure. If you have any questions about whether or not we have an information provider that could give you their personal educated opinion about your particular situation, get a hold of us at YourRemediesInTheLaw.com, and we'll be happy to assist you in any way that we can. Statewide communications. If you're not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends and family about it. That's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every site that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict pre-decided topics of discussion. Essentially, how it works is this. A wizard will walk you through a very easy setup. You know, put your name in here, click next. Put your zip code in here, click next, that sort of thing. Then it will walk you through the remainder of the setup. And then you get to a point where it will ask you what are your hot points interested in. This could range anything from credit card issues, home foreclosure, IRS matters, asset protection, or maybe veterans' rights, maybe personal health rights. Anything that you can think of. And if it affects your personal rights, you should find it in that list or something that's close enough. When the setup is complete, it puts it all together, much of what you think of a social network. Though nothing like a social network. It's very custom. It's very private. But it then puts you in contact with people in your local area that have similar interests to you. The idea here is to put the power of education and communication back in the hands of the common man. If you are in need of legal advice or you need someone to represent you, you're going to have to get an attorney. It's just that simple. But if there was a way, a private place that you could go to discuss matters, your personal opinions, their personal opinions, with people that were like-minded, maybe you jump online one day and you say, this happened to me today. First person comes back and says, well, I disagree with that. I don't think that they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. Well, that's probably not going to be a tremendous amount of help to you. Maybe the next person comes on and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do were I similarly situated. I'd watch these YouTube videos, and then I'd go down there to my local county courthouse, go to the law library, get a law dictionary, and look at these terms. Maybe the next person after that says, those all sound like great ideas. I'd also go to this particular website and check out these educational materials that might assist you in your learning. And then for you to go and do some due diligence on what you're reading, just people's suggestions, people's opinions at all. But if you did some due diligence and educated yourself, maybe the farther you got into it, you discovered that it's not as difficult as you initially thought it would be because you're focused on one single subject. And you get to a point where you've educated yourself, and now you're handling your own affairs, your own matters. Well, folks, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. And that's all we're trying to do here at Statewide Communications is just very simply get people to start talking again. Of course, there's no cost to you for using Statewide Communications, either signing up or the regular using of it. And so we hope that you'll pass that around. Freedom's Radio. If you're over the road, you don't want to deal with the call process, and you're just new to your remedies in the law, and you don't yet have your username and password, therefore you can't see the phone number and the PIN. By the way, if you'd like to pick up a membership to your remedies in the law, it's very easy. You just simply click the register button. Fill out your basic information there. You'll enjoy the first 30 days for free to evaluate it. After that, it converts to a very affordable $10 a month on your credit card or your PayPal. But every single call is recorded. You have years of archives to go through, a vast wealth of knowledge, as well as many other wonderful features. But if that's not an option for you today, you have freedomsradio.com. Every night, the calls go out over the air at 9 p.m. Eastern live. There's also the question bar there where you can type in a question, click submit. As long as that's during call hours, that will pop up on the moderator screen, and we do our best to read every single one of those questions out over the air, as long as they are appropriate. So you don't get them one-on-one with the information provider like you would be by being a private member, but you do get your questions answered. There's no cost to utilize Freedom's Radio, so no matter where you are or your circumstances, you never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right, winding down here, I'd like to go over one last bit of housekeeping. This is your caveat emptor, or your buyer beware. For any purchase that you may make, if your remedy is in the law or any of the other sites underneath the umbrella of Americans Restoring America, when you come aboard and you go with an information provider, you are doing just that. Information providers pay Mr. Edward for advertising at your remedy is in the law. This payment would be an expense to that information provider along with any other expenses that they might have associated with your particular product or service. When you contact us, all we simply do is listen to your particular scenario, quickly deduce from a list of folks that honestly most of you would probably never be able to find on your own just simply because they can't be found. Can we make those introductions? Not every part on the information provider is always going to be successful. Everybody always hopes for the best. We plan for the best, and believe you me, we aim for the best. But unavoidable things do sometimes happen, and when they do, you have to roll with them and deal with them as you would with anything else in life. But we also want to emphasize, though, that the intent is always to be successful. If you have any questions of that, we welcome you to visit www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com/testimonials and see what others have to say about these products and services. Now, let's touch very quickly on the subject of refunds or the refund policy. There is none. Not if the remedy is in the law, anyway. Of course, when you come aboard and you go with a particular information provider, again, that is exactly what you're doing. So any discussion of a refund or a credit would be a strict and private matter between you and the information provider, and even then, that's very few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances. You are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular process or information provider's time. All right, lastly, pertaining here to all of the information providers at Your Remedy is in the Law, we'd like you to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these conferences are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always be civil. Besides, if a question is posed properly and then answered properly, then we can all learn something from it.
Well, Mark, thank you so very much for that disclaimer. We appreciate you. And this evening, Brother John has made his appearance. We're just really grateful. Actually, I'm surprised because John has had a harrowing day. John, why don't you step up to the plate, tell us what's going on and what's on your mind.
Well, thank you very much for your appreciation, Michael. I've had a teeny bit of fun today.
Hold on a second, folks. We've got a little issue going on here.
My low back that dates back to an event about 17 weeks ago where I was blown off the roof of.
All right, finally got that thing quieted down. Thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen. We had a computer that would just
Michael.
Didn't want to recognize. John.
Yeah. There's that thing where I got blown off the roof. Tomorrow I go in for an additional surgical procedure, but I've been having a lot of fun and a lot of positive results from that surgical follow-up. Thank you. Tonight, by the way, thank you, Martin and Michael, for your kind and gracious introductions. Tonight, we're going to cuss and discuss something called a constitutional challenge. And the constitutional challenge is right now, there's it's kind of a difficulty when you enter into litigation, whether it's civil or criminal, and you find that there's a conflict in a state law or a federal law with your constitutional rights. And most individuals have no clue that you can actually challenge those rights. And many years back, there was an issue where we challenged an Internal Revenue statute, which they said technically was unchallengeable, and even under the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure that addresses challenging, they said, well, you can't go after this because the party is a government agency. And amidst everything, the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, and I'm going to read this verbatim for your edification so that all of you understand this. Rule 5.1 in the FRCP, Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, constitutional challenge of a statute, dash notice, certification or intervention. Notice by the party. A party files a pleading, written motion, or other paper drawing into question a constitutionality of a federal statute must promptly also file a notice of the constitutional question stating the question and identifying the paper that raises it i.e. the pleading, whether it's civil or criminal or in the court case, etc., if a federal statute is questioned and the parties do not include the United States, one of its agencies, or one of its officers or employees, or in an official capacity, or B, a state statute is questioned and the parties do not include the state, one of its agencies, or one of its officers or employees in their official capacity, and serve notice and paper on the Attorney General of that of the United States of the federal statute, if a federal statute is questioned, or the state Attorney General if a state statute is questioned, either by certified or registered mail or by sending it to an electronic address designated by the Attorney General for this purpose. B. Certification by the court. The court must, under 28 U.S.C. 2403, certify the appropriate Attorney General of that statute has been questioned. Okay. C. Intervention, final decision on the merits. Unless the court sets a later time, the Attorney General may interview within 60 days after the notice is filed or after the court certifies the challenge, whichever is earlier. Before the time to intervene expires, the court may reject the constitutional challenge but may not enter a final judgment holding the statute unconstitutional. D. No forfeiture, a party's failure to file or serve the notice, or the court's failure to certify, does not forfeit the constitutional claim or defense that was otherwise timely asserted. Okay? So there's a lot of rhetoric there. It's actually a fairly short statute, a very short rule in the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure. And they've bucked up to protect themselves in a way that the U.S. government doesn't like litigation against itself or its employees or agencies. And so that was written in there so that if it doesn't include federal agency or a state agency or a federal employee or a state employee or one of their designees, then you can file a constitutional question according to Rule 5.1. Now, a few years back, we had a situation regarding a Treasury Department statute, and they said, oh, no, I'm sorry, you can't challenge that as constitutional, and because the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure state that you can't. And in that case, we asserted that the statute that was rendering unconstitutional was higher than the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, and the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure under 18 U.S.C. 242 were denying them their rights under color of law, rule, code, practice, or policy. And in that particular case, it took 8 weeks of between recesses and rehearings and continuances that went on sometimes for a week at a time between going back to the Deputy Attorney General and the attorneys for the IRS and then back to this before the judge stepped in, and Judge Moss has long since retired, but what happened was is that he just says, look, I'm not going to wait for the Attorney General of either the U.S. Attorney General's office or the State Attorney General's office to step in on this one. It's clear that there is a deprivation of rights under color of law and that the constitutional challenge is valid, and that he says, I'm compelled to honor the constitutional challenge. And for this individual, he ruled in the defendant's – well, actually, I say defendant. They were actually the plaintiff. The Treasury Department was getting ready to file something, and they were complaining of them and giving him the raspberries, but they didn't file anything. They hadn't been filed yet. and we filed ahead of them, and we got the plaintiff's position in the case, and he ruled in favor of the couple. Now, a nasty nuisance of that was that the deputy attorney general moved to have the case sealed afterward, and we did not know that until till after it was already sealed. They made a motion in limine to have the case sealed, which was very shocking to us, because we were preparing to publish that and use that for others and to be able to help them. At this juncture, when it comes to federal statutes where the U.S. government is a party to, it's very, very hard to push a constitutional question. But for those of you who saw Mission Impossible with Tom Cruise, there's one where Anthony Hopkins plays the IMF administrator, and Tom Cruise had been Ethan Hunt had been given a mission to recruit this young lady for a specific mission, and to get back at this guy that supposedly was getting ready to market some bioterror and et cetera, et cetera. But Ethan Hunt makes a statement. He says, "I didn't realize you wanted me to extend this relationship to get her involved in this case or in this mission." He said, "That's going to be very, very hard. That's going to be very problematic." And Anthony Hopkins, the administrator for the IMF and possible mission force, says, "Well, Mr. Hunt, this is Mission Impossible, so Mission Tough should be a walk in the park for you." Okay? That's what we do. We're right now restoring liberty to America. There are a lot of individuals. We have enjoyed our soda, our slice, and the remote, being the master of our own remote too long. And in the midst of all of that, time with our legislators and in the legislatures, both state and federal, have gone unattended to. Things have been passed and codes and rules and policies have been passed that we have not paid attention to. And it's the hired help that's been doing this. And we, the employers, have not been paying sufficient attention to our employees while they're working. Now, I sternly and with great emphasis added encourage any of you who still have your senatorial conventions preparing to take place in your individual states. Through most of the primaries, they elected your delegates to your state senatorial convention. And in your state senatorial convention, there's something that's very, very important. They have what's called a platform that you vote on, and the planks of the platform, and you adjust that. What happens is that the platform is supposed to be the how-to guide for your legislators when they don't know how to vote, or they're out of their depth and they're not familiar with that particular topic. What happens is that technically, the Democrats are supposed to go to the Democratic platform for their state, and the Republicans are supposed to go to their Republican platform. And so that what happens is that those platforms are adjusted and modified at your Democratic senatorial convention or your Republican senatorial convention. And whichever party you participate in, and I'm not going to get into the cussing or discussing the merits of one party or the other, there's things that I see that occur that are right in each party, and each party also has there's travesties that are occurring in each party. It would be, to me, it would be good if we went back to not necessarily a party president, but elect went back to electing the presidents based on the merits, and the vice president the president takes the majority vote, and the vice president takes the runner-up vote, regardless of what party they're at. It's very important to do what's right, and based on what's right is the way we should consider voting for our elected officials. I was nominated for an elector for this presidential campaign. I personally had someone else that I considered a better candidate than myself, and I withdrew after the voting for electors started. I withdrew my candidacy because there was someone else that I thought was significantly more highly qualified than myself, and he was vote the same way that I did, and so I withdrew my candidacy, and that gentleman was voted in as an elector. That's one of the very important things that can occur at your senatorial conventions, your state senatorial conventions. Now, what happens is that those conventions go up to the national, and you work on your party's platform and those planks at national, and our senators and representatives, based on their party platform, are supposed to vote by that. We have not been paying the due diligence that we could or should, and so a lot of statutes have been enacted, voted into office, et cetera, that shouldn't have been. Some of the party platforms that I've planks that I reviewed, it took me almost 3 weeks to go through and study all the planks in the platform for the just for my state senatorial convention, let alone the national senatorial convention in the party of my choice. And I'm not going to tell you which part. You probably figured out which party I participate in, but whatever party you participate in, that's way above my pay grade. That's your choice and your vote. And I encourage you to exercise your discretion and your voting on those topics at that pay grade, okay, that you are, because the Declaration of Independence, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and they're endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, and among these are the right to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. And to secure these rights, governments are instituted of men by the consent of the people. And when it comes down to Abraham Lincoln's November 19th, 1861, Gettysburg Address, the last line he finalized it up with, a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. You are the highest authority. And these legislators, they're hired help. And what's happening is that if we're not paying attention to what our hired help is supposed to be doing, and keeping the rules of their employment straightened out, especially with the party plank, then we're going to be fighting an unmitigated, unrelenting battle of constitutional challenges. Now, if they say an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Constitutional challenges are the pound of cure, or the 10 pounds, or the ton of cure for the ounce against the ounce of prevention. We had a chance, and I've at the senatorial convention that I was at. I sat down with some not just from state representatives, but some U.S. representatives and U.S. senators, not just from my state. I had the honor and privilege of buying lunch for three U.S. senators and four representatives, of which none of them were from Texas, but they were at the convention for a committee meeting that they all had particular interest in. And it's nice when you get one-on-one, toe-to-toe, with these legislators and you point out some of the errors and the constitutional challenges that you may currently be working on so that they can address them and possibly get them taken care of without having to go to court. But, and if we don't do our due diligence and take our ounce of prevention in advance by working with our legislators in advance, and especially through the party platforms and planks, what happens is that now, like the FRCP Rule 5.1, we have better rules of civil procedure, 5.5.1. We've got an armload of labor ahead of us. Now, it's very, very important that when we're going over all of these rules, and they've that some of them have state statutes that are extremely critical. And I'll pull up one, for instance, here. Let's look at Wisconsin. Wisconsin, WSL, Wisconsin State Law 893.825, Statutory Challenges. One, in an action where a statute has been challenged to be unconstitutional or the violation of preempted by federal law, or if the constitutional validity of the statute is otherwise challenged, the Attorney General shall be served with a copy of the proceedings and is entitled to be heard. Those last six words, and is entitled to be heard. Paragraph 2. In an action which the statute is alleged to be unconstitutional or in violation or preempted by federal law, or by construction of its validity, the statute is otherwise challenged, the Speaker of the Assembly, the President of the Senate, the Senate Majority Leader also shall be served with a copy of the proceeding, and the Assembly, the Senate, and the Joint Committee on Legislative Organization are entitled to hear this and must be heard. Okay? There's, and I can go through all kinds of different state statutory challenges that address this, but just because a law is a law doesn't mean that it's right. Absolutely, quite the opposite. You know, and when it comes to 18 U.S.C. 242, well, 241, 242, and 83, 18 U.S.C. says whoever under color of any law, statute, ordinance, regulation, or custom willfully subjects a person in any state, territory, or commonwealth possession or district to deprivation of any rights, privileges, or immunities secured, protected by the Constitution or by the laws of the United States. Okay, it says whoever under color of any law, okay, it's very, very important that you remember that the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure are also, oh, wait a minute, it said rule or law, okay, the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure in many cases are considered almost tantamount or equal to law. Now, when it says that there's a constitutional challenge here, the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, the judge is going to wash away your claim almost instantaneously under the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure 5.1b and just say that, hey, look, this is a federal employee that's involved here, or this is a federal agency. it or 5.1A1A, you know, it's going to, and he's going to say, I'm sorry, and then object, Your Honor, I have this following right, and this is a deprivation of that right and constitutes a federal felony. Okay? There, what happens is that, you're going to find that it's going to be an uphill battle all the way. Our discussion tonight is a two-edged sword. It's discussing both edges of that two-edged sword. One of the edges is the ounce of prevention, meaning please, when you have the opportunity to participate in a political caucus, you know, state senatorial convention, or the national senatorial convention, the national conventions, please, 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 spend your time there. And I know, going to national can be very expensive. Going to state was expensive enough. It cost me a few $1,000s. But going to national, sometimes national costs $5,000 or $10,000 or $15,000 to go as a delegate, and it's not easy fiscally to sometimes for some people to absorb. In years past, I've tried to shoulder up to help send candidates to national that I believed had the right heart. There was this one young lady, she was, I call her young lady now. At the time, she was 69 years old, and she had things down so sharp. This was in the 2004 National Convention, and I shared $3,000 with her to cover her plane ticket and help the hotel and everything else. But Henrietta had every subject down cold and pat. Her husband, who had been an attorney, had just passed away 2 years earlier. He had been an attorney and he had been a state Supreme Court judge and in Texas, and before that had been a state Superior Court judge in California. But they, if you are not able to go, try to figure out who and how you can shoulder up and help somebody else go that believes and understands what you believe. And some people will say, John, where do I get a copy of the platform? Your local precinct chairs have access to that, and a lot of times there's a URL online that you can download and get it. I know three people that they banded together and they chipped in to have a copy of the current platform printed for every single delegate for the state senatorial convention that I attended. They not only had it printed out for every delegate, but for the that was in attendance, but it was every delegate that was registered. So whether they actually made it or not, even though the platform was updated, they mailed out like 3,100 copies of this document that cost them about $14.50 a piece to get printed. When you're working at a grassroots level with people of that quality and caliber, $14 and some odd change, sometimes it's a lot of money and sometimes it's nothing. And forwarding, you know, for a good cause is extremely valuable. The currently, I'll be very matter of fact and frank with you. We've got here at ARA, Americans Restoring America, we have multiple constitutional challenges currently in play, and there's one in California. One of our students that was from time to time is regularly on this call. There's people that ARA is helping pro bono. There's a church up in Wisconsin right now that they somebody's trying to take the church away from them, and so we've been donating time to help that fellowship that they went in and seized all the assets of the fellowship and the bank account and everything else, stating that, well, there's two people that are part of this fellowship that donate to it, and we believe some of these assets came from them. They haven't been able to prove that, but they seized their bank account and everything else, and they say, we understand that they help contribute to the price of the property, and so they seized the property. Totally unconstitutional, totally illegal. And that Wisconsin statute that I shared with you just a little bit ago, Wisconsin State Law 893.825, we've got statutory challenges that are out with a student who's an associate pastor at that fellowship that they're being heard right now. It's never easy filing a statutory challenge or a constitutional challenge. Liberty in America is complex citizenship. In fact, citizenship is here is that you would defend to your own blood the right for somebody to stand in the park on a soapbox and at the top of their lungs advocate something that you would spend a lifetime fighting against. But this complex citizenship is that you would stand for their right for free speech and to share their opinion. That's part of this complex citizenship that we're in, and it's not easy. Now, a lot of us have gotten used to coming home and being the master of our own remote, and there's a slice of pizza and a glass of soda there, a slice of soda and a remote. And, you know, and when we get home at the end of the day, we're kind of a little bit or a lot of it tuckered out. Some of us who are over 23, it's even a little more, the issue's a little more exacerbated. We don't have quite this energy and esteem that we used to. And if we don't continue to stand up, regardless of how little steam we have left, it was murder turn 23. I don't know what's going to happen when we turn 26. We're going to be left out in the cold, and our children and our children's children are going to be left out in the cold with statutes that the battle is not a flesh and blood, and it's not about these all these statutes. The battle is of principalities and powers in high places. And it's the battle that's not seen, and you should never get distracted with what you can see with your eyes. It's the old battle of good versus evil, and evil is still trying to do the best job they can at winning. And when the people that are good don't stand up and stand against everything that's evil, the evil flows like a flood. And, you know, and you've heard me before. I am convinced beyond the shadow of a doubt of an intelligent designer of this sorry, miserable third rock from the sun that we call planet Earth and home. And the evidence of intelligent designer is undeniable to me. And the evil is the ones that are doing battle against that intelligent designer, and the good are the ones that are doing battle for. Some people say, well, I sold my, you know, this person sold their soul to the other team. No. That team, the away team, everybody's part of the away team. They start out being part of the away team. You have to make a commitment to the home team. That's all there's to it. There's no selling your soul or any of this other thing. And if I promise you, if you decide to play ball for the home team, the away team covers the gridiron almost completely from their 50-yard line to their end zone. That's it. It's almost like AstroTurf. It's so thick. The home team, the coach almost has to have binoculars to see how few the players are out there. But I promise you, if you're helping move that ball for yardage, blocking or whatever you're doing, or maybe even helping carry the ball, the away team is going to be all over you like white on rice. And especially when it gets into party issues, and if you want to connote one particular party with the home team or one particular political party with the away team, there are some people that do that. I no longer choose to do that because I have met people that were well-intentioned that have been on both parties and in both teams. You know, they just didn't understand the gravity of their misconstruction. So I don't indiscriminately say, well, this party or that party. I don't do that anymore. And I promise you, the away team, they know who they are. And if you're helping move that ball for yardage, they're going to be all, or carrying the ball, they're going to be all over you like white on rice, trying to fold, spindle, mutilate you, and rub you out like a cigar butt in the AstroTurf. And doing what's right for the home team means restoring liberty to America. And it's not going to be easy. You know, and we all know the quote, the tree of liberty must be refreshed from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants. And that also includes the blood, the sweat, the tears, you know, the coin, the time, you know, your everything. It's all of it. And that tree of liberty, the more we refresh it with our time and our sweat, the less blood we have to throw at it. If it's come to the point where we're having to throw blood at it, it's serious. And that's because we have fallen down on our job and we are not standing for liberty anymore. We're letting not just ourselves down, but our fellow person. And that's brutal. You know, and it's I suppose if I was to say, look guys, I'm gonna sit this quarter out, I'm gonna sit it out till halftime, or you know, I'm gonna sit these few plays out, and it was to only hurt or injure myself or detract from me, that's bad, but that's not quite as bad as letting my fellow person down and sitting it out to their detriment and watching my fellow person suffer beside me because I just got too tuckered out, or the allure of that slice, that soda, and that remote for that particular evening was greater than taking the time to get involved with at that local caucus meeting or that local precinct meeting, et cetera, et cetera. Please, please, please don't get distracted by the sirens of Titan. Every one of those 56 men that signed the Declaration of Independence, save one, died almost paupers. They knew in advance that they were giving their life, and potentially the mere act of signing that Declaration of Independence, that they, the Second Continental Congress, they knew that they could be branded as traitors and hung, drawn, quartered, or decapitated, and that they knew if they didn't stay nose to the grindstone and carry through with the effort, that their very lives could be taken away from them. And they did not dissuade or fall back from the challenge. Many of them would later go on to give their lives for this country. It says, no greater love hath a man than to give his life for his fellow person or for his brother. They gave their life, most of them gave their wealth and everything that they had so that the liberties that I and each of you have the honor and the privilege of affording right now so that we could have those. And it's time to consider that maybe that time in front of the boob tube isn't quite as necessary as it could or should be. And don't get me wrong. Hey, I enjoy a good movie once in a while. And once a year, John Archer and Patricia take me out for Father's Day to go see a Father's Day movie. They started doing that 20 some odd years ago with a movie called Finding Nemo. And yeah, I haven't had a TV or satellite or cable TV antenna or cable or dish set up since last time was November 17th, 1977. That was the last time I had anything set up like that. I may not watch paid programming. In fact, sometimes it's kind of embarrassing. Some people ask me what's on TV right now, and it's kind of embarrassing. I don't have a clue what they're talking about. And don't make no mistake. We've got a box of DVDs that we've got some old sets like Gunsmoke and Matlock and Andy Griffith and things like that. I enjoy sometimes sitting down with the wife and the family and just taking a load off. But if that becomes a way of life, that was the reason I took the TV out and gave it a respectful burial in a dumpster on November 17th, 1977. I still remember the date. It's I had a condominium, and I was running a halfway house for early release for gentlemen coming from Chino Men's Institution in Southern California. Hold on a second.
My apologies, I had a cough there. And I came home from college one night, and this is only a year or two after I got out of the Air Force, and I realized that I wanted to turn on the boob tube and get idle, my normal wake time was 4:25 in the morning, because I had to drive up to the California desert, because I worked for the Defense Department at the time, and in the mornings. And I realized that the TV was dragging down my life. Maybe you guys, have things in your life that are dragging you down. Maybe the priorities that you have, I know people that have TVs, and I have no problem with, people having TVs and, cable or whatever. And sometimes I ask those people for help, and I've been honored with the privilege of their assistance, and if we're going to do good, we have to be proactive, and when we realize that something slipped through, constitutional challenges or statutory challenges, and I know I only covered one particular state statutory challenge rules tonight. For those of you who know statutes in your individual states that could, should, or need to be challenged, please make an appointment with Michael for a consultation so that, you know, we can chat and cover, you know, maybe we can just get you covered on an elementary basis on how to proceed forward. You know, but if we all stand together and we play tunnel rat, and I don't know how many of you know, I know that three of you know exactly what a tunnel rat is, but the term comes from a Southeast Asian theater when the VC used to dig tunnels into the mountains underneath the brush, you know, the entrances to the brush, and sometimes there would be hundreds and hundreds of meters of tunnel just big enough to crawl into and back into these little side tunnels, and they would have sometimes a whole platoon of VC tucked into a tunnel, and they got very practiced at breathing very shallow and very quiet, and they would wait till we passed by, and then they would come out and flank us, and it was devastating. And some of these special forces, one of my next door neighbors, showed me a picture of him and his brother. They were both, their first two tours over there, they were doctors before they went in, and their first two tours, they were both special forces, and they were both tunnel rats. And on one of them, Paul took a picture of Jim where he had 47 knives, six firearms, and sundry other just tucked into his clothing, including these cables that they would just put around the person's neck and pull on it, and they could sever the head that quick, that they had to be silent and deadly, because if somebody got alerted to their presence, it was over. But they would sneak into these caves, and Jim commented that, you know, that picture of him, he said, Paul used to carry more edged weapons than he did, and that one night, one single tunnel, Jim said that Paul took out 93 VC after dark without a single shot being fired. And we need to learn, when we come up against the bad guys, when the bad guys, sometimes they have two legs on them. Sometimes they have a binding, meaning that it's a book, or it's been codified into a law book or a legislative issue. We need to play tunnel rat, and we need to move slowly. And as we move through the jungle of the tyranny that stands before us, that when we see these little holes in the side, we don't, the mountains, or see a little extra soil next to a bush, that we don't, a little bit of dirt in the wrong place, that we don't discount it. And if we take it as they come, one at a time, and address them eventually, and we teach our fellow person how to do it, and we support our fellow person playing tunnel rat, eventually we can turn the tide back to liberty. So my time is coming to a close. It is my honor and privilege to serve beside each of you. I hope that on the day that I'm called to stand before the Most High King, that I'm called to commence graduation from this place into that place, into eternity, that I will have left the resources for my fellow persons to continue to battle and fight the ongoing battle of liberty. And remember, liberty is not a destination. It's a journey. And to that end, we will always be traveling. It's like running a race, like the quarter mile or the mile. If you're running like a tortured slave and you're ahead of everybody, and all of a sudden you throw up your hands halfway through the race and say, look, guys, I'm winning. You know, look. And all of a sudden, all the competition is going to blow past you. It's like security. When you have home security or national security, the fact that you're secure means that you're working very hard and that each time your enemy figures out a new way to break into you, that you're figuring out how to counteract that and prevent them from breaking in. It's the same thing with liberty. A good marriage is not a destination. It's a journey. The fact that you have a good marriage means that you're working like a tortured slave to prove to your spouse every single day, no matter what happens, that you use each event to show that you love them, and you use that to show your children that you love them and that they the value that they need to. It's the same way with the struggle for liberty. It's a journey. It's not a destination. Thank you. Back to you, Michael.
All right. Thank you so very, very much. Let's see. Press star 2 on your keypad, ladies and gentlemen, to raise your hand. Press star 2. Hello, Ed. Let me get with you 1 second. For those of you on Freedoms Radio, you'll see to the center right of your monitor the silhouette of a rectangle laying on its side. Left-click into that. Type away your comment or question. Underneath that silhouette of a rectangle, you will see a place to put your name and some other information. Once done, hit submit. Your question or comment will then pop up on my end, and I would be happy to lend my voice to your comment or your question. So, let's see. Ed, are you there?
I'm here.
Good deal. Go ahead.
Good evening, Ed.
Hey, John. Right at the end there, John, your voice got distorted as it came through to me anyways. I don't know whether anyone else was having a difficult time or not. I like what you said. I agree with it, which is neither here nor there, but I liked it. I'm imagining we all, one of the things I bring up when I'm here pretty often is owning your own land. Pennsylvania doesn't seem to recognize private ownership of land anymore. They use the Fourth Amendment, and they recognize that they can violate your Fourth Amendment right that's supposedly secured by them. But they can come on your property, the land, at any time they want, and search your land any time they want. But they need a warrant to search your house. And they don't want to recognize land as private property. And that shows up in the taxation and such things as well. And I have a lady friend that I used to talk to a lot more than what I do now. And she used to point out to me that right there in the Pennsylvania Purdon's documentation of the laws, it talks about taxing real estate. And that's, but again, in the Constitution, in the Declaration of Independence, following through to the Constitution, and that follows through to the Pennsylvania's Constitution as well, you're not supposed to be able to tax the exercise of a right. And owning property is the exercise of a private right. And that ought to be grounds enough right there to contest the statute that taxes your land. I don't know I know for a fact. I still have the patent maps for my area with the warrants. And the lady that used to be, she was a county recorder back in the 50s and 60s, and she did a lot of research into that. And she told me that they didn't used to tax land. You go down to the courthouse and they say it's always been. No, it hasn't always been. They taxed incomes made on that land, and that was illegal as well, from what I understand. This is the thing. And then I wanted to say too, I got a couple other things here, actually. I was on a podcast earlier today put out by Mike Adams. He had a young lady on there who was talking about growing hemp, and she grows medicinal hemp in such a way she processes it with no heat. Heat adulterates it. And this woman was on to so many different things. It was obvious she knew what she was talking about. And it was always, it was completely obvious that she was in love with what she was doing. She had moved here from Estonia, is it? Up on the Baltic?
Estonia? That's a country.
I think that's where she came from. And she proceeded from scratch, didn't have anything, and she got people to invest in her a little bit. She had the dickens of a time finding land that was free of contamination, but she did it up in Oregon. And she's in business, and Mike is operating with her, and it was like, but she was so in love with what she was doing, and that's a big part of getting committed to what you're doing. I recognize that was the basis of her commitment, and it was just that was. I think I needed to see something like that. And I think that's apropos to say here as well. And then again, you got to love what you're doing, and then the commitment flows. The love has got to be, it can't be negative based. It's got to be positive based. It's got to be based on helping people.
The love for liberty.
Yeah, a love for liberty works too, and it's difficult to maintain that. I'm going to a lunch tomorrow with some guys. They can't stand the Constitution. They're all socialists, and I like.
We'll pray for them.
Yeah, my big question is why keep hanging with them? We have a common Christian tradition in reform circles, but I've known reform circles like Gary North and people like that are Russos, Reichstuni, people from the American Southwest, they were Christian Reconstructionists, I think they called themselves, and they're nowhere near like that. And he accused me of because I wanted to keep the Second Amendment to the Constitution, I got accused of sacrificing children to Moloch. And I'm like, big grief. Do I write them back? Yahweh commanded the Israelites to he banned and told them to kill in the cities that they couldn't take any slaves from and burn the whole city, just wipe it all out completely, don't take anything. And I killed children. They killed children. That's all there is to it. We're not in those times, and we can be thankful to our Messiah for that. But
I don't know. I think abortion qualifies for killing children.
Well, abortion qualifies for that. Yeah, I do too. But because you want to protect yourself when other people are armed, you want to protect yourself with arms. That ain't bowing the knee to Moloch. I'm sorry. But the other thing is I need a review getting a passport. This crap with the train wreck up here. I have a litany of physical problems now that looking up the chemicals that I got contaminated with because of the burning of vinyl chloride and the addition of other chemicals lead to diabetes, just all metabolic diseases, metabolic failures, lung diseases, lung failures, all sorts of stuff. And everybody around here is suffering from something or other. And the courts have made a $600 million decision that was offered by Norfolk Railroad. And I'm curious as to how Norfolk Railroad is the one who offered the decision. It's like it went through one of the district courts, either Southern Michigan or Northern Ohio. And somehow or other, we got a decision that sounds like more like it came from Norfolk Railroad than anything else. And I think that I'm just going to have to go with it. But in order to get paid by it, I need to have an ID. And I think that passport would be appropriate at this point.
Well, what I encourage you to do is make an appointment with Michael. And
okay.
We'll hold on a second.
Sure.
I'm sorry, I had to cough there.
Hey, I have those interruptions, too.
Yeah, make an appointment with Michael, and let's chat about that and get you started on that path, okay?
Okay, I'll call him up tomorrow morning when he wakes up.
Yeah, rib. You know, hey, be nice to me. I've been up since the crack of noon.
Well, yeah. Well, you're rather easy to be nice to. Actually,
I normally wake up about a quarter after four or a quarter to five. I wake up usually on my own. I theoretically have an alarm clock that is set for 5:30, but I'm usually awake long before that alarm clock ever goes off.
That's one of the things that damaged me. That one of the damages that's been caused by the railroad. I don't have 3 hours anymore. That's all there is to it.
I'm going to accidentally hang up on Ed here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Have a good night.
Give Michael a call in the morning, and let's go from there.
All right.
Take care, my honor, brother.
Our next caller is, I'm so delighted to introduce or reintroduce to everyone on the call. This gentleman here is an investigator of great magnitude and was the former lead investigator for Mr. Tony Davis, the late Mr. Tony Davis. It's my pleasure to turn the call over to Johnny Ringo.
I'll be your huckleberry.
Hey, guys. I'm giving you a formal invite into Wisconsin to with the travesty that's going to go on in Milwaukee in about 4 weeks. You and Johnny and Michael want to come up to my compound. You're formally invited. And you can witness what you will call a travesty when you see this national convention convene in Milwaukee. It's not going to be pretty. But John, we've been in contact. If you get a chance, you can give me a personal call on this church consolidation or confiscation. We've been contact taken on this, and I'm not particularly interested in it because I do not believe in any higher power or anything. But I do the state, what the state and the Fed are trying to do to this small organization. The battle will be taken in the blood, flesh and blood, as you say, if it continues. So, but I would like to see you guys come up to Wisconsin and visit my compound, and you can witness what you call a travesty in Milwaukee, as it very will be. So, and
what time are you going to be available tomorrow?
Anytime after 11 o'clock.
11 o'clock Eastern or Central?
Central.
Okay.
We're
copy
in Central
that, John?
Time here in Wisconsin.
Yeah, let's chat tomorrow, and let's see what we can do to help.
Well,
I have already set my calendar.
Right, yeah, we've been
okay.
We've been in contact about the situation. And,
now, just FYI, tomorrow. I will be pulling into the hospital. They at 12 o'clock for follow-up surgery. Now, sometimes when I'm in pre-op or something, you can ask Michael. I've taken calls when I've been in pre-op.
You can call me in a future day. I don't want to have any conflict with surgery. We can make it for Friday or whenever. Also.
Okay. Yeah, you're breaking up a little bit, Johnny. If Friday would be better, let's shoot for Friday then.
Okay. It's good for you. I mean,
yeah.
I've been made aware of the situation and the way they're going about it. They're going to fail. There is absolutely no possible way that they're going to win on it.
Yeah.
Like I say, I don't believe in any higher power, but I don't like what's going on in that situation. It sucks. And we do have the means to remedy.
Right. Let's chat on Friday. If how does 10 a.m. Friday work for you?
Fair enough.
Can you give us a call? Now I'm gonna ink you in for 10 o'clock on Friday, just to be safe. Call Michael at about 9:45, and just confirm that we still have a 10 o'clock on Friday, because usually the day after surgery or day or two after surgery, sometimes I'm a little bunged up, and sometimes I don't get out of the hospital as quick as I had hoped. And so just confirm that that's still good, okay?
Okay, sounds good. Like I said, there's no big rush. Well,
it sounds like there is a rush.
Well, it's going to come down. It's going to crush them is what it's going to do. I mean, I investigated to it. And I've talked to several individuals on this, and there is no way they're going to come out on top on this unless there is other types of intervention, let's say, enforced. And that's even questionable. But like I say, I'm just fed up with this whole system. And like they say, we can discuss the possibilities of it. And like I say, if Friday doesn't work, maybe sometime, you know, next the following week, I can contact Michael Friday and find out that we can both sit down and discuss the situation. But
sounds good, Johnny.
Okay.
Thank you for your call, Manner, brother.
Ah, sure.
All right. I'll be calling. I'll call you tomorrow on another matter, Johnny.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Got a couple of contacts coming in at 9 and 10. And,
11 o'clock Central. That's what I got booked. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Sounds good. Take care.
Thank you. All right. Next is Jennifer Sue. How do you do?
I'm good, thanks.
That was a sneaky laugh.
Well, I'm just wondering, like the tax land tax grievance board in Sullivan County here, they're unelected quasi-judicial five people. And I read online, anyone who works for the government has to take the oath of office. And when I went to the assessor's office the other day and asked for a copy of that, she said they don't have to take the oath of office. And so I'm just wondering, does it even matter? Is it something that I should dig deep further? Or doesn't it even matter if they've taken it or not?
Well, that's a good question. You know, there was something, you know, and I could be mistaken, and I've been mistaken before, but there was something about anyone in a public office shall be required to have a oath of office, you know, and I could easily be mistaken, but they what position are they serving?
Well, they decide if you have a grievance about the land tax, like I'm my land is owned by a non-profit church and it should be an exception to the tax rule, but their response was, we don't allow, you know, give you an exemption, which I said I'm not asking for that. And so that's what they do. They say yes or no to the people who complain about how much tax they're being charged for the land, county tax and the school tax on their piece of land.
Okay. This is we're discussing exceptions versus exemptions.
Yep.
Okay. Now, there's some individuals that they were able to get an exemption versus an exception, and they under Chapter 508, now, by the way, the CP 575 that you have from the IRS that has your TIN for the trust, does it have an E after it?
Yeah, it is the not for profit E, I believe it's E. Yeah, the one
does
that,
it have an E? Yeah,
it's the one Bernie recommends. Yeah,
yeah. What happens is that the CP 575 that has the E after it that is the religious exemption. And to that end, that's the one that we file, and we do the Chapter 508 filing on it. And when that happens, then any property that's in that, this is different than the regular tax rolls. When you have a corpus sole, a CS or a CRT, that has a CP575E attached to it, that you have either the 501 or the 508 exemption, then any property in there is exempt from property tax. Okay. Now, the one thing about the corporation sole is that there is Supreme Court, there's both state and U.S., well, the big ones is the Florida State Supreme Court ruled that corpus sole can be used for the, and actually the Supreme Court, the assets in a corpus sole can be used as a benefit for the individual administrating the corpus sole. Now, the individual administrating it, you know, there's different titles for that, like first chaplain, minister, there's a whole lot of titles. But because you're administering the corpus sole, you can use all of, some people say, well, that property is being used for their benefit. Yes, and there are Supreme Court decisions to support that. And that's right, and that is legal. Does that make sense?
Is it the Supreme Court of Florida or the Supreme Court of the federal government?
Hang on just a second. There are multiple decisions, and I'm going to see if I've got I think my blood sugar just crashed because I'm starting to get fuzzy pickle right now.
Ooh,
in preparation for surgery tomorrow, I have a 24-hour no eat. Yeah, it's the only thing I can have is water right now, so I've got to be careful. It's
I gave the grievance board all that information that you just mentioned anyway, and they just ignored it all, and they just don't want to make a decision. But the fact is that that board is unelected by we the people, and they didn't even take an oath of office to uphold the Constitution. So how do they get to decide, five people get to decide anything regarding the law when that is the case?
Yeah, Article 6 of the Constitution, Article 6, Paragraph 3, makes the statement that the senators and representatives before mentioned, the members of the several state legislators, and all executives and judicial officers of both the United States and the several states shall be bound by an oath or affirmation to support the Constitution. Now, that's Article 6, Paragraph 3 of the Constitution, not the Bill of Rights. But what happens is that when it says all executives, that's kind of the pot where they throw everybody else into, and including police chiefs and sheriffs and et cetera. A lot of public officials are not bound by an oath of office. It's ugly. It's satanic. But it is fact. So you need to be careful about that one, Jennifer.
All right.
Okay. I apologize. That's just That's just the cold, hard facts of what's written in Article 6 of the Constitution.
Okay. Well, I won't bother carrying on about it then.
Okay.
So I'll let you go and have some water or whatever you need.
Yeah. Thank you. The Father's blessings be upon you, young lady. You take care of yourself, all right?
You too. Thanks. Yep.
Good evening. Thanks for being on the call.
My pleasure.
Back to you, Michael.
Michael, are you listening?
Michael Edwards, you there? Mr. Edwards?
I'm here. It's my just problems with my phone. Anyways, last question tonight is Bill, and from Florida. Go ahead, Bill.
Am I
Bill
on?
From
can
Florida? Bill from
can
Florida. John can hear you.
Oh, okay. Well, John, I just wanted to find out when was a good time to discuss the issues that you and I have been talking about. If it's going to be tonight, or if it's going to be tomorrow.
What's your schedule in the morning looking like?
I'll be available whatever time.
I'm kind of fading right now. I'm kind of getting a little tuckered. I kind of hit the wall about 5 or 8 minutes ago, so I'm kind of begging. I'm going to beg everybody's grace. Tomorrow morning, let's touch base around 9:30 or 10 your time. Let's make that about 10 or 10:30 your time. Okay.
Okay.
That'll be 9 or 9:30 my time.
Okay. That won't interfere with your medical issue, will it?
Nope. The thing for that, I don't have to worry about that till noon.
Oh. Okay.
I'll have over an hour of grace on that appointment. Thank you.
So you say, did you say 10 or 10:30 my time?
Yes, please.
Okay, so that'll be 9 or 9:30 your time then.
Thank you, Bill.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure. Okay, very
Thanks.
Well.
Take care, my
right,
brother.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us this evening. Return tomorrow night, same time, 9 p.m. Eastern, where we will be listening to Mr. Slevin present the limited liability company that has zero tax liability when you orchestrate it through two managers that happen to be charitable religious trusts. Until then, good night, everyone, and be well.
Good night. Good night. Thank you.
Night.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you. Thank you.